Welcome. I mean, I feel that it might be good for us to talk even more about, individually, about what feminism means to us, if anything. I mean, we don't, maybe some of us don't define ourselves as feminist, and I think that might be nice. But maybe some other people have different ideas. Maybe there were some aspects of what Charlotte said that needs to be picked up.
I'd like to say something. I see more and more now that we really have to connect between concepts that are not usually connected in our male-dominated society or connected in a wrong way. And our task is to connect them again in our own way, from our own thinking. This seems to me a very important task of feminist ideology and also practice. For me, like in Israel, there is a very big debate between Zionist and anti-Zionist people, or that, as I said, some, and they are from both sides. Some people are in peace movements, but still, what is really, I think, for me as a feminist, that I just have to see our peace movement in a feminist eye. And to redefine what peace means for women, from our own point of view as women and as basic human rights, you know, because I remember myself say about feminism that actually it's a humanism, because so. When people say, you know, you are against men or something like that, so it's for human society.
There are a few things I'd like to say during after the talk given this morning. First of all, this is my first time to Europe, but I've been out of Asia most of the time for the past 10 years. And therefore, this is my first encounter with the feminist movement. This is also my first encounter with people of different beliefs, lesbians, etc. And I'm not, you know, since I've traveled a lot, I've taken this as a phenomenon of different nature. But there are things that I'd like to react to and at the same time challenge the people of the first world from the third world perspective. First of all, in Asia, where I come from, particularly from the Philippines, the present problem there is very much different from here, definitely. It's much of hunger and poverty versus abundance of some people. So it's a very contradictory society already, where people, as somebody said, asked me more this while ago, when people do not work, do they receive money? I said, no, people do not work, they don't receive anything. So you have one of hunger, you have something of not eating anything for one whole day, you know, in contradiction to those who have so much. And so we speak in terms of contradictions, in terms of conflicts. We cannot avoid it. We don't want it, but it's there. No, it's facing us. And therefore, the issue is not of a male-dominated society in my country or in Asia, as far as I'm concerned, but it's more of the system that oppresses us. Even this word oppression, some friends of mine here react to, because as they say, it's left-wing. No? But in the reality of Asia and the reality of the Philippines, the word oppression is so much meaning. No? It means the domination of a system over a particular group of people. It's not the male domination at all. although, as in my country, for example, it's a woman who, one woman leader who oppresses the whole country, you know, and you know her. You don't need to mention her name. And the third point I'd like to bring up is the reaction against a kind of thinking here that, you know, one country wins over the other, one idea wins over the other. So I'd like to mention very briefly here Sibagaigi, Sandoz, you know, this Swiss multinational company, Nestle. In the Philippines, what do we do? This is a reality. The Sibagaigi fertilizer pesticides are poisoning the rivers, poisoning the plants, poisoning the air, you know. So what do we do? If we fight for it, if we go into natural farming, that's one idea over the other idea. You know, it's trying to win over the system of a chemical, the use of chemicals, you know. So I'd like to react to that. It's not patriarchal system. It's another kind. It's a particular idea of a group of people who would like to earn profit from farming by using poisons, you know. And so we'd like to react to that. We'd like to go against that. We'd like to use natural means, you know. But the whole it's a whole process that we will have to undergo in the Philippines. And so the networking that I would like to challenge the people of the first world here is that it is a network not only of sharing skills, no, which I value, of course, but it's the people of Swiss, for example, the Swiss people. What will they do with the reality in the Philippines where Sibagaigi is poisoning our rivers? What do you do with Nestle? What should the Swiss people do with Nestle, which is feeding our babies, one-year-old babies, with artificial food, you know? It's the entire cultural system, it's educational system, political system that supports Nestle and Sibagaigi. What should the Swiss people do with that? You can't say to me, you know, I'd like to refer you to Berne Declaration. No, it's not. It's not only one group, Berne Declaration, says, okay, we'll fight, we'll do some research in Philippines, Nestle. This is the challenge I'd like to give to pose to the people in the first world, vis-a-vis not only Philippines but entire Asia as well, because Nestle is not only found in Philippines; it's found in the whole world. And I'm not depending very much on the WHO. WHO is another dinosaur. It's a whole world altogether different. It's not working for the people. It cannot even intervene when there is massive poverty and massive health dislocation in my country. It has not helped at all. So I'm banking on the Swiss people. We're banking on the people of the first world to do something with Nestle, Sibagaigi, and Sandoz. Because Sibagaigi, they have the support of the police, the military. They have the support of the political system, everything. So what should you do with it? What kind of networking would you want? We cannot, people of the third world cannot say, you know, you must do this for us. It's got... You must think about it, and this is the challenge I'd like to give to you all.
Yeah, leading from what she says, I also would like to say that if we are against a world order which dominates women, which consists of patriarchal economic systems, then does the feminist movement globally have any alternative to suggest to the multinationals, to the existing economic system? I mean, can we together formulate some kind of ideology or, you know, some sort of action program for ourselves? For instance, we boycott products of multinationals, we support women's groups, we buy only from small producers. Can we do something like this as a group?
There's a shop just one block from here, right across from the Migro, called the Magasin du Monde. The shop of the world, and that has already started that movement, not only in Geneva, but in many towns in Switzerland. There are stores that are doing exactly that. Instead of ordering from large multinational companies, they order from small...
What is their motivation? Is it from the feminist point of view? No. Or is it another business which is again going to make money, you know, as a business? And that's something to go into.
They have to survive. And that's the only thing they do. They don't make profit.
They're very much questioning the profit motive as being the main motive, but I mean they have to
they have to live also. They're not state supported. I mean, they, so I mean, but they want it to be more equitable. But they're having great troubles, because I was there not long ago, and they were explaining that it was often very, very expensive to order from small quantities from small producers. Causes a great deal more work than to order from larger producers, and so there are many problems that they're having.
So
but they
it
are.
It may be a very difficult thing for the first world countries to practice this. That's what we could discuss. For us, it's easier in India, for instance, where we still have a mixed kind of economy.
Mais moi, je trouve que le problème que tu poses, c'est vraiment, pour moi, c'est ça le problème fondamental d'un réseau sur le monde. C'est qu'effectivement, il y a des pays où le problème de base, c'est le problème de la survie, c'est pas le problème de d'autres modes de vie, d'autres modes de relations entre les gens, c'est vraiment survivre. Mais c'est vrai que on n'a pas non plus à dire, c'est pas nos luttes, et les femmes de ces pays n'ont pas à dire les luttes que vous menez sont pas vos luttes, parce que de fait il faut trouver un lien entre ces formes de lutte. Mais moi je ne sais pas vraiment comment, c'est vraiment bon, on en est au tout début. Et bon, ce que tu poses comme problème, c'est vrai que quand on vit en Suisse ou dans des pays d'Europe ou en Amérique, on a l'impression d'être dans le ventre du monstre. Vraiment, c'est là où sont les grosses banques, c'est là où sont les conseils d'administration de ces boîtes qui vont détruire des pays entiers. Et que là aussi, on peut faire quelque chose en ayant cette conscience qu'on construit notre force ici et qu'on aide aussi qu'on ne détruit pas la force de femmes qui luttent ailleurs. Pour moi, c'est un peu ça le lien à trouver, c'est-à-dire de dire la force des femmes, elle se construit dans le monde entier, et c'est ça qu'on a envie de mettre en avant, c'est ça qu'on a envie d'augmenter, et puis de voir les liens qu'il peut y avoir entre les différentes formes de lutte. Mais par exemple, dans le problème de la lutte pour la survie, je pense que les femmes, elles ont incroyablement de choses à dire là-dedans, parce que la plupart des fois, dans ces pays, on dit du tiers-monde, toutes les luttes qui ont été menées, toutes les luttes de libération nationale, elles ont complètement évincé les femmes. Les femmes, elles ont lutté dans ces luttes, elles se sont fait tuer, elles se sont fait violer, elles ont donné toute leur force pour ces luttes, et à la fin, elles n'ont rien dans les mains.
Vivian thinks that what Rita said was very, very important and fundamental to what we should be discussing, the problem of survival in most countries of the world, but that somehow we should try to see how, as women, we can support women in other parts of the world. Just at the end, she mentioned the fact that women are, after all, central in a situation where they're fighting for their survival. They may ultimately become involved in a national liberation struggle. They are entirely involved. They carry arms. They get raped. They get tortured. The children are killed. And in the end, and as we've seen in many different countries, very often women are left with nothing. They're still in a subservient situation. And that she feels we have to talk about how can we help, because here in Switzerland especially, we have the feeling that we're sitting inside the stomach of the monster. You know, here there are all the international banks, there are all the international companies, the executive committees of all the boards of directors of many companies, and somehow we have to try to create links and support each other. I'd like to say something also to what you said, Rita, because it is very important, and I know very often in the West we're accused, and this certainly happened in Copenhagen, accused as feminists of not dealing really with the real issues in the world. There was a very famous quote that one woman came up with in Copenhagen about how feminism has nothing to do with hunger and starvation in the world. And many of the women there felt very angry about this. And it's something that perhaps we can discuss more in this circle. But I would only, in that sense, underline what Charlotte said earlier about it being a totally different approach to the world. companies like Ciba Geigy, Nestle, or any of the big companies that are poisoning, not only in your country, in our countries too, by the way, and we can come back to that. They are not run by women, first of all. And even if there are women, like women at the heads of countries, Mrs. Thatcher, Imelda Marcos, Indira Gandhi, whoever you want to say, these women are, I think, probably, one could say, without any exception, are not feminists. That's to say, they don't take women as being fundamentally important, and they don't recognize the importance of women in the world. Ciba Geigy and Nestle, for instance, are entirely controlled by men. They have been built up within a male-conceived capitalist world economic system, which basically takes profit instead of people as their main raison d'être. And I think it's true to say that if a feminist world, such companies would not exist. There might be other kinds of forms. There might even be companies, but they would not be of that form at all. So that it is relevant to our discussion. I mean, the fact that these companies are perhaps the most important element in your life in terms of survival. On a practical level, just taking the Nestle case, which of course is a very famous one, and I'm sure you know very well that there has been an enormous mobilization of people in the Western world against Nestle and the outrages that have been committed in terms of the misuse of their powder, because it simply was dumped everywhere and with the image that babies could grow strong and healthy. And I would say that this case has done more than any other an enormous amount to raise people's consciousnesses about the kinds of issues that are involved in global economics, if you like, and also, although to a lesser extent, feminism, because there have not been many really feminist groups that have been involved in the Nestle case. I mean, there have been many left-wing and alternative groups who have been concerned about multinationals. But in any case, it's been a tremendous mobilization and terribly important tonight. And I would say that it's not just the Swiss people, or not even the Swiss people, that have been involved. One might have hoped that perhaps more people had been involved. That's a whole other discussion. But the fact that Nestle is a multinational company means that it has to be, people have to mobilize on a multinational basis. It would be hopeless if just Swiss people tried to fight against Nestle. They have to do it all over the world, and as they still do. The drug companies, which we might talk about a lot more, is much, much more difficult. And I don't know whether you know about the most recent case some years ago. When was it? This they saw 76. There was a big explosion in a drugs plant in Seveso.
In Italy.
Well, perhaps somebody else can talk about that. Do you want to talk about that?
That's one of the issue. I think you are right to challenge us on what we are doing against the multinationals living in developed countries or living in Switzerland. But I think that probably some of the action that women have carried against those multinationals at the level of the number they are and the energy they have probably never reached Philippines or those countries. And this Seveso accident is one example of that. So after it happened, it took a very long time till the responsible person in Italy finally decided that the population should go away of this area, that it should be completely, there should be no more animals, no more agriculture, and so on. And
see, it was an explosion and a cloud of dioxin hung over the area for I don't know how long, but it basically poisoned an area of several hundred miles.
And Switzerland was concerned on that, since this company, ICMESA in Italy, was connected to Givaudan in Geneva and connected to Hoffmann La Roche, who is one of the first drug company, international company. And there was some mobilization against this, after this accident, within the feminist movement, by posturing, by doing pamphlets and historical description of all happened. actions that were trying to identify the responsible persons, like Walt Vogel, who was living in Geneva and who was very well pointed to everyone as being one of the responsible persons of all that. There was lots of different ways to react to all that, which of course it's very weak compared to what they are really doing on every country and every people. But still, I think that in those past years, within the feminist movement, there has been a reaction and an interest to do some work into this field here as well as in other countries. In England too, there are a lot of feminist women who are engaged into action against all drug companies or against the militaries or against nuclear power. In Europe, as well as in the States, there are a lot of feminist women who oriented their work into that field. As a feminist group, not or only being an individual woman within a male organization active on that field. But it's true that it's not enough. It's true that it's not changing a lot. But still, it's a beginning of a consciousness raising within the movement about those subjects, and probably doesn't answer completely to your challenge. But still, I think there is a reaction in that direction within the feminist movement. It's not a movement acting only on abortion, contraception, and. Those issues, divorce, and the issues that were at the beginning of the feminist movement in developed countries. And this new orientation is taking more and more importance, I think.
Just as a final note on that, I mean, there are two networks on these particular issues that you talked about. I mean, on the Nestle and the whole baby foods issue, there's something called IBFAN, which is the International Baby Foods Action Network, to which various different women's and feminist groups belong. And it's very much a network which has consciously tried to forge links between the industrialized countries where the companies are situated, their headquarters are situated, and the countries where the worst effects of what they're doing are being felt. And they're working, if you like, I mean, you know, success, how can you measure success? But they certainly are making, forging links and are able to act in lots of different ways, both on an international level, for instance, at the World Health Organization, lobbying governments, and on a local level. And the other network, which has very recently been set up, only 2 years ago, is Health Action International, and again, you may know this network. It is set up specifically to look into health issues internationally, and particularly, of course, takes up the drugs issue. Again, it's a mixed group. I mean, there are a lot of different consumer organizations in different countries involved in this network, but there are also women's groups, and it's an example of the kind of thing I think that women's groups could get involved in and influence and support more. And this Health Action International is trying to, amongst other things, pressure companies like Ciba Geigy, who caused the whole SMOND epidemic, or whatever you want to call it, in Japan. And they have an enormous work to do, because the drug companies are terribly difficult to get at. Hoffmann La Roche, for instance, is owned by a very small family. And there is no way, for instance, you can't do what you can in the United States or in some other countries, where you can buy shares in the company and then go to their annual meetings and try to influence them in that way. You cannot do that to Hoffmann La Roche. They don't answer any questions. You go from the press and they shut the door in your face. I mean, there is no way anybody can put pressure on them.
So,
Health Action International is currently based in Malaysia, where at the seat of the International Organization for Consumers Unions.
We can tell, maybe people don't know that now they have, in September, they have washed the
the dioxin staying in the old factory in Écluse, and they put it in 41 barrels of condibéton.
So concrete barrels that were sealed.
And those 41 barrels, they just disappear. Nobody knows where they are, and Hoffmann La Roche knows very well where they are, and refused to tell to every government, Swiss, French, the German government, Italian government, too. They wanted to know because everybody is very scared to have those 41 barrels in this country.
This is,
and they just refused to say. And they and there is now an action to make pressure on Hoffmann La Roche. There's an action of boycott.
International as well, which is
internationally. Boycott of Hoffmann La Roche to make pressure so they tell where they are.
And every day in the newspaper, today it's in Germany and tomorrow it's in Italy and then it's in France.
the only thing that is known is that these barrels arrived in France and then they disappeared. Nobody knows where they went.
And the whole thing is that the police is searching very hardly to find them, you know. And judges are suiting lots of people because of that. And surprisingly, even if they are very capable when it's a question of terrorism or other questions, into that field, they are completely incapable to have those people talk. They don't know how to have those responsible talk. You know, they are completely incapable. So this shows that their power is, in fact, much more important than the state's power.
Yeah.
It's to my understanding, it's not something that has nothing to do with male power. It is male power itself, and understanding how important it is. Of course, the actions we are doing and all the actions that women may start against that look very small and insufficient. But still, there is another aspect of the reaction against that within the women's movement, I think. Is this search to go back to the nature, to have women's lands, to try to get completely self-sufficient in our food, in our and to do exchange between women's communes, so that we don't have to deal anymore with this system. I think those two attitudes came within the movement those past years. One was to do some mobilization and try to pressure against those multinationals, and the other one is to get away from them and try to build what will be our new society, and that will be completely self-sufficient and autonomous from male system, including multinationals within the male system. And I think that's the two attitudes that came those past years in reaction to that.
In terms of that, I think it goes back to your question earlier. It seems to me that it's very important to talk about how we live in the interim, so to speak, before the revolution, or how we live in the situation when so much of what we try to do does seem insufficient to the total problem. And I think my own faith in the possibility of change is to see that even though we don't make the total changes, that little bit, but certain things do begin to look different. And it seems to me that one of the issues on a large scale that feminists do face and is sort of the issue of a feminist economics, the question of a feminist analysis of the economy. I don't think there's any question but what feminist analysis of the economic situation is anti-capitalist, is an understanding of capitalism and multinational corporations as, in my view, a patriarchal economic system that is very destructive. But the task of constructing an alternative mode of economics is much more difficult. I think most feminists feel socialism as we know it is not adequate, though some of those ideas may be a big part of creating a new system. And it seems to me that therefore we exist in this situation where we are very clear about what is wrong and have to fight and boycott multinationals or the various forms of it. But we're not so clear about really what we're trying to create, because it doesn't exist in the world at this point. And I think that when you were talking about that during the break, you said something I think was very important, which is that the movement of women towards self-reliance in India, which has more connection to an existing economy that is not already tied into this, and the movement that Rima talked about in the West of women trying to create self-reliance, where in some ways it's much more difficult because there's very little space for it, maybe are not really the economic system themselves, I think, but are a way to live in the midst of trying to create something different. And that what I notice when we talk about that, though, is that we have to be very specific about how and what ways you can do it, and not just idealistic. Boycotting multinational corporations, for example, I think it's almost impossible to boycott them in total, because you can't go anywhere or do anything practically in most countries. But it is very crucial to pinpoint specific ones, just as the Nestle one has done, or as the investment in banks in South Africa movement has tried to do, to pinpoint some of the very worst points. And in the process of doing that, to show people the power you have to begin to try to move them, only slightly. I mean, the investment in South Africa movement has gone on for 20 years, and it has not, brought down South Africa. But it has at least raised consciousness of people that what they do in their lives is a part of the total system of oppression, and that, it seems to me maybe we could pinpoint other places, other specifics, rather than a broad boycott that becomes hopeless, so you don't do anything. What are some of the more specific places with the drug companies, with the specifics? And I don't know any... at the bottom of all of that is the issue you raised, Rita, is the issue of survival, and survival in a less oppressive fashion. But I don't know any way to that except through a series of very small and concrete actions that people try to take and hope that over time it adds up to altering those systems. Maybe people could talk about the travel agencies is another one, in terms of the whole trafficking women and exploitation of women in tourism and prostitution. There are now women calling for boycotts of travel agencies that sponsor these tours. And there's some women in the Netherlands who are in the process of putting together a list of which are these travel agencies, so that if women travel, or even if women themselves don't travel, they can get people who do travel. We could go to various groups, international groups that do travel, and start demanding that they boycott these travel agencies, as another example. It doesn't eliminate forced prostitution or sex tourism, but it starts to make it more difficult for them to make the profits off of us. Maybe people could mention other ones. My mind is not functioning right now for specifics, but
in Israel, we are polluted mostly in the last 2 years by pornographic video films that are coming mostly from United States. It is a new phenomenon, and it's really changed all the situation in Israel. People talk differently and think differently because the changing in the terms of sex and violence and all this. And it's, I think it's a phenomenon that it's influenced many countries in the third world and so on. I don't know. In Israel, it was very much accepted because it is very much industrialized country, and people have the money to buy. To buy and to use.
I'd like to
say something. I'd like to talk more about networking. I appreciate the efforts of international groups to help third world countries, including the first world poor. As Rina said, these are small efforts. This may not be very dramatic, but it helps. And we are not ignoring that. Definitely we appreciate any telegram sent to the government, a repressive government, we deeply appreciate. If you only know how much it makes the governments angry and reactive, we are very happy for that. Any single telegram that you send, we really appreciate. It helps a lot. It may not change the system, as somebody said, but at least it prevents the killing of one person, a very important activist, for example, or a particular peasant. I have been attending several groups of, you know, which are also into network building, and I noticed that these are the intermediary kinds, you know, intermediates, like an institution which is working with grassroots groups. They meet in one country and they discuss development, and then they network, and then they send letters and other things, and then they meet again, you know, those things. These are, of course, very important, no? Because they help in the shaping of ideas, which are therefore brought down to the grassroots somehow. Like the issue of pesticide, which happened in Malaysia. These were intermediate groups. They met, they discussed the problem of pesticide. They decided that they would network. They would send each other slides, and they would visit. But I'd like to speak more of the networking of the grassroots groups, particularly the workers, for example, of another country, visiting or meeting with the peasants and the workers of another country, discussing the common points of problems, you know, understanding why their society moves that way. But the perception comes from their own analysis. It doesn't come from any book, but it comes from the way they live it. And the only way that they can do it is to stay in one country, really understand the society, the political system, the economic, cultural, so that at the end they come back, they meet, they decide the common action. The action may not be the same as the one of the intermediaries, but it could be an action that would lead to facing some issues which bother them, like hunger, no? Or too much contamination of the food. But definitely it's an action generated by the people from the grassroots. And this is the kind that I see is the potential of ISIS, no? For the moment, it is a meeting of intermediaries. I have heard the other countries speak, and they represent their institutions. And I, of course, know that they are also in touch with the grassroots. But I hope that through ISIS, I hope it doesn't stop next year, that the women grassroots groups really go to another country like India, or they go to London or anything, but try to stay there and really understand the society, and really stay with the grassroots, and meet again regularly to come up with common action, so that particularly a boycott, like we think it's not helpful, would be a massive nationwide international kind of action. Not necessarily boycott, it could mean many things. So I appreciate the attempt of ISIS really to ask for funds for particular activists to stay in another country for 3 months. It's not very easy to stay in another country, believe me, no? Even though we shout and we say, you know, we're for everything nice. It's another culture altogether, it's another language, it's another habit, and you stay there. But hopefully that those of the people who are going to another country for 3 months, they will come up with a better understanding of the society that they go into. No? Like Philippines goes to Mauritius. This is our first time to hear of Mauritius, in the same way that Brazil knows for the first time that there's such a country like Philippines, things like that. So I'd like to stop at this point, and I hope there should be more discussions and network building, because it's terribly important.
Like me, for example, maybe you observe that I speak little in the past few weeks, because in my work in the Philippines, I am in touch more on the grassroots level. I don't although we have the collective discussions with some of the members of the institutions, and then also with the people of the grassroots level. But with this kind, this is my first experience meeting many women from the different parts of the world, and then understanding the different situations in the world. So maybe you observe I speak very little and very only sometimes. But deep inside me, I have many things. I have many experiences. I have many learning that is going on with me, trying to understand the problem, trying to appreciate more a country, to understand more a country, to see this world, to see the world, what is happening in the world. And then I find it that the ISIS is just so... the ISIS, the exchange program and the ISIS, it's very... I appreciate the initiative of the ISIS to make this exchange program, because it will bring us, like me, for a woman working in the grassroots, to understand our situation and the situation of the world. And then I feel also, I want to express it now, that maybe it's very difficult for me to go to Mauritius, but I still wanted to go to Mauritius for 3 months and live there, because my commitment and my dedication to work for the people, for the women that are exploited in the world. I don't know if I am feminist or not, but I'm a woman working for the struggle of the human race. And especially I will be dealing back in the Philippines with the peasant women in our country. So going to Mauritius is another kind of work, learning experience. So Kitsna and myself were talking yesterday. We were discussing about my program to Mauritius. And one came out very important is the network building between Philippines and Mauritius. We can exchange many things, from documents to materials to skills, so that both country, third world country, can share what we have, can share what we have in the Philippines. I can learn from what they have in Mauritius in the many kinds of work in the women's group. So I find this very important, the network building. And from this moment that we are discussing the network building, I also find the value of these things, because it is only in this moment that we can see the world, can understand better what is going on from the different countries of the world. Because I really experienced different problem when I was in the Philippines, the third world. I hear many voices, many things about the problem, what they're talking about. And then when I came to the first world, there's another problem aside from our problem in the Philippines.